opposed to evil. Now, all that can be true, and what you said can still be true, that's indigent, that lots of students can still feel that her presence here and speaking out subverts a large portion of that message. I hear that, I know that. It's incredibly, makes me angry, it makes me pissed off, all right? So then, what are we doing about it? We're working as hard as we can, first of all, in what we can control today, to, in every other action we take, repudiate her vision. So when I leave this, I'm going to go up to an appointments committee meeting, sharing in progress. We're going to try to continue our momentum, where we've had a lot of success the last 3 or 4 years, increasing the number of women and people of color on the staff. But now we have a lot of work to do. So again, the inclusivity that a student experiences in the 1L year is driven by the rhetoric of any lack, yes, but it's also driven by the people standing at the podium in your classes. And I went through law school, a different law school that had its own views, still does, set of inclusivity problems. 3 years at that law school, I didn't have a single email. Okay, not some of it's on me as an elected student, shame on me for not seeking out the then 8% of the faculty that was female, but 1L, no. So, you know, yeah, I could say more. I think other questions are going to, but yeah, so thank you.
Hi, Andy Gruber.
Yes.
I grew up surrounded by messages about how gay people are deficient and less than human. I internalized those messages to see myself as less than ideal, and it compromised my mental health in profound ways. Amy Wax, as recently as 2015, called gay couples, and by extension, gay people like me, tragic and regrettable and less than ideal. As recently as this summer, she called my non-white friends here less than ideal, saying we'd be better off if there were fewer people of color. This is the language that fuels the hate crimes we see on the rise and puts many people in this room at risk, which you and the institution is legitimizing. This is the language that makes it hard for all students in this room to thrive. So my question is, if you care about the health and well-being of our student body, especially students of color, why does Amy Wax continue to work here? What's taking so long, I think is another big takeaway from this conversation. What's taking so long? And what concrete steps are you planning to take after to address our concerns?
And to build on his point, there are decades of research showing how discrimination based on who you are impact not only your mental health in deadly ways, but your physical health. This is having a severe impact on our student body. And why does it have to be the onus of the student, yet again, to be starting this process to get somebody out of here who is physically and emotionally harming all of us?
Those are profoundly important and good questions. The only part that's easy to answer is among the least satisfying ones, and which is why is it taking so long? And it, you know, again, to be crystal clear, the only way to get rid of the university grants tenure, not law school, the only way to get rid of the tenured professor is this process, and that's going to take months. I gotta be careful here. I will say this, and it's the other good question you guys advised the onus on the students. I would say, by the black letter law of this university faculty handbook, it's actually a somewhat more capacious, it says any person can bring in, okay? So that's, well, you guys can interpret that, okay? The harm. I don't feel like I have a satisfying answer on the question of what are we doing about the harm if the only answer is next week to get rid of any facts. Because I guess I have to say that's not going to happen. And I understand that compounds the pain. Okay. I also don't want to use this forum to talk about the ways in which, in the past few years, through many different, we've become, in some sense, the most tragic ways, those of you who were third years and know what else happened with two student deaths 2 years ago, we have realized that we student health and well-being. We have done more, but I almost don't want to list chapter and verse because it seems like I'm trying to take that focus off. But, you know, our expansion of our on-campus counseling, our focus on wellness is part of that. But again, it doesn't solve, let me be candid, it doesn't get at what you are talking about. And it also doesn't get about the prior question. I guess what I pledge to do and what I've been doing is, it's even in a world where it's going to take a while to deal with the wax situation, we can press ahead today at bringing in more faculty who become tremendous mentors and role models for students who are in the groups that have traditionally been marginalized. Okay, and we have done that. So we actually have a track record. If you say, do more, and to use the video law students phrase from last year, do more now, you should say that, and you should hold us to account. So I guess I should say, let me collect, recognizing the unsatisfying nature, because your question really is about the question of wax. But we are not going to wait. And I know there's things I can't say about that. We're not going to wait while this process may not play out to, in every other way we can, do more for the diversity of our faculty, for the student body, for the mental health, for the financial resources. And I guess another concrete thing I would tell you is I'm going to stand through on this promise. I'm pledging immediately more financial resources, at least $25,000, this year, if not, I'm willing to consider more, that will kind of go to support discourse events specifically for groups harmed by Wax's comments in her process, so to speak. Some of the student leaders know about that. My colleagues, Maka Monroe and Arlene Rivera-Finkelstein, are figuring out how to administer that. But that's a targeted, and again, doesn't get at the harm, but to the extent that raising others' voices is at least incremental. That's something we're going to do. It's done. Okay. Now, what hasn't been done, that's going to go to groups specifically harmed. It's not going to go to the full panoply of our full diversity in discourse, which is somewhat broader than, a little bit broader than all of the different groups WACS has called out. And there's an issue of administration, et cetera. But that's another thing. You can spend money. You can hire people. We can, the rest of us speak out in our voices to try to repudiate what she said and move the law school in a direction. Those are things we can do immediately. The thing that's taking time, the thing that's taking time, and with all, I'm going to say something that is not going to be popular in this room, the thing that is both taking time and where the outcome is highly uncertain, given the precedents, given the university decision makers involved, it's highly uncertain. I don't want you to hear me today to be issuing a false promise that just wait and we'll solve this issue by the spring. I don't have the authority to say that. I don't know enough. I don't know enough about this process. So that's, I'm not saying, just a little bit of time and this will completely go away by the spring. I don't know, but again, to reiterate what we are doing, while this is going on, even as this issue is so important and you're raising all the right questions, we're not going to wait and say, we'll wait to see how it plays out. And we want your ideas. We want your suggestions. What can we concretely do now with money, hiring, student support, scholarships to try to address it, immediately, even while this other stuff is going on?
So you've spoken a lot about the school, and so my question is more about when the school. So many of us here are public interest students. I'm specifically in criminal justice reform and recognize racial disparities. Students of color have already stated that they have had to address a wax in their professional interviews, which required them to devote even more time to addressing any wax's rhetoric. How can Penn Law justify the negative impact that any wax has had on the student's professional endeavors?
Yeah, great question. And I can And what you've done really helpfully is, let's be clear, there's at least two overlapping but distinct harms. I mean, there's an incredibly profound harm for people who have felt discrimination and marginalization that's been overlapped with. I don't want to trivialize it by calling it a reputational or a brand concern, but it's for those of you who chose this law school, we're going to be affiliated with this law school for years. And it's something I worry about. And I just, again, as a white guy, I'm not going to feel the first, look, again, any US is attacking me only in my role, even though I step out of that role. I hope you believe me, though. On the reputation issue, I feel it. This is my professional life. So when she's tarnishing, when she's hurting, when she's saying stuff that with this loss was name attached on it, that's one where I feel and I worry about that.
I just feel like it's important for. I mean, I feel like I understand that this has been difficult for you, but I feel like a lot of this time has been spent on that, and she's challenging the very existence of this human in this room, and that's it's just
not fair. No, I get that. Let me talk about numbers, okay? Again, I do want to differentiate. This does nothing to help the people who feel marginalized sometimes. This does help the people. This helps all of you when you think about what is this doing for your role in the profession, okay? We don't see, and again, she did this 2 years ago, and we looked very carefully at public interest and private sector job placement. We looked very carefully at recruiting the next generation of law students. We looked carefully at the kind of imperfect but important reputational surveys of lawyers and judges. And maybe statistically insignificant way, but the numbers went up, actually. They didn't go down. But again, that's, of course, not a complete answer. However, again, more weeks of talking with people like Kathy Carr about Amy Wax, who's a major Philadelphia public interest lawyer, Jim Sandman, who's our alum who heads Legal Services Corporation of America, about Amy Wax, alumni, or people like, actually not an alumni, Jamie McEwen, who's the head of Morgan Lewis, who's kind of trying to build inclusivity into their law firm. They get it. I mean, they support you. I guess what I want to say is they realize how tough you have it. They want to support you. They are not less, again, you're welcome to tell me I'm full of it, but they tell me that they're not less likely to support you in launching your career. And we're working with them to make sure that's the case. Okay? If you're feeling that, I'm well aware of the problems with the interviews where people were asked about it, and we're trying to make it work. But in terms of your ability to do what you want all of you in your careers, it's important to us, it's important to you, both from empirical evidence and the work we're doing personally with leaders in all sectors of the profession. They're repudiating WAX. This is something we can talk more about, but we're committed to helping you. I get your worry, but we're going to work on it. Our interests are, but I don't want to talk about myself, but I want you to believe me. Our interests are aligned on this, okay?
Hey, Rieger, if I could say something. My dad is a provost at a public university in California, and the only reason I mention that is that I have a unique perspective on higher ed and the unique position that you're in. But that also means that I've seen Latinas who are presidents of institutions continue to advocate for the Latino populations they serve, and see that when they do that, their dissertations, their PhD, their credentials are completely attacked. Or what I'm trying to say is that I've seen presidents of universities continue to draw more explicit lines on what is right and not right when it comes to students of color, and they have less social capital to expend, and yet still expend it. And I'm asking, given that you, as a white man, have a lot more social capital to expend, why you're not being more courageous here in explicitly saying what is right and not right for the diverse students here? Because I really just don't feel like we're getting enough cover. And I just want you to recognize that you have a lot more social capital to expend, and the personal tax you get will not be nearly the same.
Well, I get that. I know that, and I feel that. But so let me just, let me say something maybe some of you wish would happen, but I don't want it to happen. If I said in this meeting, or through a statement, if I said, I think Amy Black should be fired, I'm not saying that this is hypothetical. So I got to be, so yeah, first of all, you're right. I don't feel like this person. And I've said that. I mean, the reason I'm talking about myself is partly, I acknowledge, it's not as hard for me as it is for you. It's not. I get that. And I get it more the more you share your experience. Okay. But the specific reason of why I'm not being more specific about labs is that's not about white privilege, it's about the gain of role. The minute I say it, I'm out of this universal process. Period. And right now, I don't want to be out of it. As much as it would make my, whatever, I don't want to be out of it.
All right, my
name's
Gwyneth. I'm a one-out. Before I get to my actual question, I want to respectfully ask if you can extend past 1 hour, because I think it's critical.
Yes.
So over the past 3 years, many student groups have asked the administration to formally censor AUWAC. Other than this being another opportunity to listen to students' displeasure with AUWAC, how will your actions, if any, rectify this issue in any way that will directly benefit students of color who have been disproportionately impacted by WAC's hateful rhetoric? More specifically, based on what we've already heard today, would you or other administrators at Penn Law be willing to spearhead revising the rules for revoking tenure if a professor's flagrantly racist comments are not easily applicable to the rule? And in my wording, I say you, because in many ways you are the face of Penn Law and the only person that we currently have access to.
So, great. Again, good question. Let me try to. I invite you to remind me if I don't get all the parts. I do disagree with the very last part that I'm the only person you have access to, but I want to. We can talk more about that. Look, I think the general question of the tenure balance and the tenure standards is something I and other faculty are willing to revisit. And this is where I'm going to disappoint you. I can't tell you what I think of the current process without saying too much about the current process. Okay, it was set by the university over 20 years ago. This is my first experience with it, but I am probably going to be a player in that process. I want to come back. You started talking about your question when you say formal censure, and I actually am going to invite you to respond, especially since we can go longer. So what happened in September of 2017 was a statement that I issued condemning what Rack said about the 1950s crowd. And then what happened soon after that was 33 law professors issued a letter saying we condemn what any Rack said. What happened this summer is within a week, some people, I know that you would like to see it sooner, but I issued a statement. It would have been hard to be more equivocal distancing her words, saying they're fundamentally antithetical to everything we believe in here. Now, that's not a formal censure. This is why I want to actually sincerely ask you if you think that would get us more, would be more declarative to this group. Amy Wax won an award last year for her courage. One of the questions here talked about my courage. Amy Wax is regarded by a group that has professors at a lot of great schools as exhibiting courage in the face of attacks from her law school, attacks from the law students, attacks from the dean. Okay? So, and she herself claims to have been attacked and silenced. So she's going on speaking to her around the world talking about how she's silenced. Okay? Now, here's where I would invite you. What do you think? And it's, I'd ask all of you to think about it. Do you think we would gain more from a law faculty? What do you mean by formal censure? Not sense or censor, but I think you said censure. What do you mean? I don't know that we've done that as the law school, but I'm open to hearing.
By that, I mean it's one thing to remove her from teaching 1Ls, and it's another thing to remove her completely from being associated with a law school in general. So while she may be receiving awards for being courageous for standing up against what she feels like attacks from the law school she's employed at, students are still feeling attacked that their law school thinks it's appropriate to house her as an employee here.
You're all really smart. The issue thinks it's appropriate It's just not, that implies that we made a decision on appropriateness. It implies that, okay, so I mean, what, here's what we know for sure, is in the year 2000, she was granted tenure by a group of people, the majority of whom aren't here, okay? So, but the present tense thinks it's appropriate implies that we've made a decision that hasn't been made.
Okay? I understand that this decision hasn't been made, but in defense of my statement, how long? Because 3 years to me from her first offense, or however many times it has occurred, like, we continually say that it hasn't happened yet, but when is the time? Yeah. How many more years will students have to go understanding that the law school hasn't taken meaningful action against it?
That's fair. You deserve to ask us to go faster. You all deserve to ask us to go faster.
And I just want to clarify my last point as well, just because you'd allow for follow-up.
Yeah.
By me saying that you're the only person we have access to, what I mean by that is we don't have access directly to the entire board of people who is making decisions on people's tenure. So, whereas you're saying that I can't do anything right now because I personally am not in charge, well, you are the face of the people who are in charge, and it's your words and what your actions that you can take back to that board to make meaningful change.
So, well, I'm responsible for that, and I hear you. I also, though, again, this is if you're working with some colleagues, I mean, the Faculty Senate is a real thing. I think I'd like to work with opportunities for you to, you know, talk with them sooner rather than later. You know, so I do, I'm not trying to avoid my responsibility, but to expand the range of people you can talk with, I'm not sure we can't do that soon. And I think my colleagues and I would welcome the chance to try to set some of those up across the university.
Thank you.
I can say this is very important.
My name is Jonathan Aguano. My classmates have already done a really good job describing some of the very alternate arms that AUX has caused here in this community. I just want to name again that the ideas that she is, this long history of espousing, aren't only racist, but also white nationalist, which is the ideology, right? Like, it's killed many people, not just through the state, but also state vigilantes. So, given that the faculty handbook claims that the university is committed to creating a learning environment that is safe for all members of our community, what I'd like to ask is, why should our classmates who are students of color feel safe here at the University of Pennsylvania? And following up on that, like, what specific things have you done or are you planning to do beyond the changes to curriculum to guarantee everyone's safety here?
So the part I can't answer is what's a balancing test. Why should a faculty be able to say this? I'll say I agree with you that her rhetoric, particularly recently, quite very much in the stream of white nationalist rhetoric, going back to Ian Powell 50 years ago. And I'd say more about that now, but that's an accurate description. The safety, you know, I would say we have a team of people working on making sure people from the students who come from traditionally marginalized groups have more support. So we've ramped up support on the staff level. On the first generation level, on the economic level. Some of these people are in this room who work with students every day, dealing with students who feel unsafe or feel a lack of belonging at this law school. We put hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in resources, and that's tangible. We can show CSR to the county. And saying all that, I get it, glass is still here. Okay, so I'm not trying to be two-faced, but I am trying to be honest. Glass is still here, and we're doing all that. And I get how unsatisfying that is. But again, we got to do all that. And maybe all that being, again, specific. More staff who specifically work with students from backgrounds that have been marginalized. More events, more discourse, more money for these groups, more psychological support, more faculty hiring. more in, you know, groups that have been misrepresented, more leadership at this law school, you know, in terms of diversity. And, you know, so I don't want to give you more details because I see the lines, but we can talk. But again, glass is still here. I get it.
Hi. So you started off your session by talking about how good the administration has been at listening to students and how that's such a high priority for you. Well, you should know that many students of color and other impacted students in this room feel that that is completely false, that you have not done a good job at listening. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's been many white students come up to the microphone to ask you questions precisely because you should also know this, that many students of color feel that they have not been listened to in this process, even though they've engaged with you over and over, and their demands still have not been met. So that leads into my first question, which is, you mentioned these grants before, you mentioned around the figure of $25,000. There's a lot of confusion as to whether or not that money will actually explicitly and only go to impacted groups and how that will be administered. Second of all, you keep punting almost every question to the question. I know, but that's part of my question. To the fact that you have an investigatory and adjudicatory role in this. But you also have an advocacy role as dean for all your students. So if you can't perform your advocacy role, then why have you not sought, or have you sought to have someone else assume the investigatory and adjudicatory role so you can take the appropriate advocacy role for all students at this law school that they deserve?
By the way, but just the implication, I could also assign somebody else to do the advocacy, you know, I mean, it's... You better have me do the advocacy and somebody else do the adjudication.
Well, you're the dean.
Yeah. One of the questioners, I appropriately said too much about me. So, but I'm the dean for 100% of the students, 100% of the faculty, 100% of the alumni, and 100% of the students who will ever come here. Okay? A 55% approval rating is not good enough. That's not my ethical obligation to take a position that, or you see what I mean? So yeah, yes, I am your dean, but I'm the dean of students who are not yet here. I'm the dean of 50 years worth of alums, and I'm the dean of every single staff member and employee, even the ones who are directly working against our mission. Now that's not supporting WACS, but I'm saying satisfying 2/3 of the people is not my role, okay?
This
is
not how I go to the party. I don't understand what you're saying by only 55% or 2/3. The student body is asking you to advocate against one person.
You're asking.
And especially the most impacted students are asking you. And that's the reason why we're up here, because they feel like you're not listening.
So first of all, if they think we're not listening, I'm not, and others, leaders are not listening, shame on us, and we need to do better. And that's a, we gotta do more. Now, the second thing you said, though, is they feel, you said a lot of important things. Then you said, they feel like they're not listened to because you haven't granted the full list of their demands. That's a non sequitur. And we're all, you know, the mere fact that an institution doesn't completely agree with every single competing, you know, set of demands is not, doesn't mean we're not listening. It just means that we're in a very complex situation. So we've certainly, again, you know, I'm not trying to argue with you so much as, look, do you want to hear what I really think, or do you want me to just be a people pleaser? I'm serious. I mean, I could say great question all day long, and maybe have you emerge from this room, maybe with a, I think, a false. I'm trying to be as realist. I think I owe you as much realism and honesty as I can. And the realism and honesty there is like to expect that we're going to grant 100% of the demands of every student advocacy group is, you know, that's. I think I am going to disappoint you. That's the past.
Okay, I guess I have one follow-up question, but so Can you describe how you have granted demands, like specific demands that they've made about making it explicitly and only available to impacted groups?
Yeah, the single change in the curriculum that I discussed came out of, I wouldn't call them demands, came out of items that we discussed and in most cases were brought to us by student groups, okay? The financial resources were brought to us by student groups. Those are two that I can tell you, right, where you call them demands, I call, sometimes groups call them demands, sometimes they call them items, whatever. But it's, I think we should take some other questions. Look, the key demand is fire AUX, and I'm here, we haven't done that. Okay, that's been established, we haven't done it, and you're all entitled to, that we're failing you as an institution. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. We haven't fired you.
In your email regarding AUX with hateful comments, you stated when Professor Wax speaks about race and culture, she does not speak for this institution or those who work and study here. However, Penn Law continues to employ AUX and provides her with the perceived authority to speak on national platforms. How can you say that AUX doesn't speak for the institution of people who work here when the institution continues to provide their academic space for her racist rhetoric and the people who work here refuse to issue formal sanctions? How can you expect students of color to accept your statement when their tuition dollars fund Amy Wax's career? How can you expect women to pay the salary of a professor who has expressed that women are less knowledgeable than men?
You're right, and my statement is right. And what I mean by that was, no formal sanctions. We're still paying her salary. She still works here, and that sucks. I mean, it makes all of us in this room angry. And for many of you, it makes you feel deep hurt and marginalization. And okay, that statement, I did not mean in a formal censure or the promise that we're going to fire her. I made that statement in a more literal sense. And I guess I would ask, I'm open to. We can do more on this. I meant it quite literally. There's nobody who's been paying attention in the last 2 years who thinks that any current faculty member or the dean or the administration agrees with Amy Wax's racist speech. And that was, for those of you who weren't here 2 years ago, the vast majority of the faculty, I issued a few statements. I mean, and we're not trying to take credit for this. It's the empirical point. Does she speak for any other faculty member here? As a factual matter, I think the answer is no. But you're right. This is where you're right. She does it with her Penn Law business card from her office in her tenure spot. It's a bad thing for this law school. It's a bad thing for all of us, and particularly for some of you here. And I can't snap my fingers and do anything about it. But I invite anybody. If we can do more to say, do you worry that the faculty who are teaching you share her views?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for saying that. And I think I need to think about how we can deal with that concern in ways that maybe we dealt with better 2 years ago that we haven't dealt with in this episode. Thank you.
Hi, so I'm a 1L as well, and my question is about I'm figuring out how to be here, and given that by her continued employment and continued remarks and increasingly more public profiles, she is forcing all of us students, and especially those whose existence she threatens, to confront her attacks on a daily basis just being here. If we were to see Professor Wax in the hallway and any one of us were to say to her face anything remotely as disrespectful, dehumanizing, etc., as the comments she's made on much bigger platforms, would our words or actions be as protected as hers clearly have been? You mentioned that one of the fireable offenses for tenure is harassment. You also mentioned wanting us to speak pointedly to professors personally as somebody whose existence isn't being threatened. I feel it would be a betrayal of my colleagues whose lives are being threatened by her continued presence here not to do that.
Yeah. That's the easiest question I've gotten in the last hour. Is your voice is protected, even if you criticize her to her face, even if you question her right to be here. As again, don't do it in class. I mean, I'm not saying that's unprotected, but it would be a different. But if you're passing, you phrase it as passing her in the hallway. Now again, I received. We talked about alumni crush. We did receive pressure to squelch student voices 2 years ago. We didn't listen to that. I had an alumni in my office last year. Again, this is not about me. So I think the institution has been asked to shut down a Palestinian student's event in real time while the event was going on. We told that person was told to take a hike. Even I got to be careful because it's another confidentiality, but I had a specific request to sanction a student for something the student said to a professor within the last year, and that was stopped in its tracks because it was critical speech. Professor wanted something done, he didn't do it. I mean, so again,
if I said it to her, we would all, our lives would be better off if she didn't exist. It strikes me that I would face serious repercussions as a student.
You can trust me on that. You would not. You don't disrupt the class. Don't physically, okay? I'm serious. I mean, I'm not giving you legal advice, but that kind of in-your-face speech. In the way you describe it, it's not going to be punished at all.
Hi, I'm Jan Warnell as well. How do you think Interwax's tendency to base your claims on either what you discredited in theories or her own judgment? On either the widely discredited theories or her own judgment after any kind of research effects and reputation as a quality academic institution?
I want to answer that. And I'm going to do the thing, putting aside whether that has any relevance in this process. It hurts us. She hurts our reputation. Okay. Period.
And how do you think that affects this school's intention to try to hire more diverse faculty?
Really? Okay. I care about that every time, because that has been a priority. It comes up every time we're talking, and it's not just faculty, it's not just diverse, it's everybody who comes here who we're recruiting says, hey, what's the deal with this? And it may have a negative effect that I don't directly see. All I can say is when we've had the opportunity to say that we're going to support somebody we're bringing in and address it directly with them, we have had some success. That some of the times where we talk about it, more than some, I can think of 5 different times where somebody has concerns and they're either here on the payroll now or are coming next year. So it's not good, but again, this goes to the question about